From KPFK Pacific Eye Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacific Eye Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump has, throughout his presidency, used any and all excuses to justify hurting immigrants, locking them up, keeping them out, separating children from parents, denying them rights and services, ignoring their contributions, and demonizing them to his racist base. So it should come as no surprise that he has used the coronavirus pandemic to once more target immigrants, both undocumented and those attempting to enter with documents. Among his attacks on immigrants, Trump stopped all asylum seekers' application processing and vowed to turn away everyone from the border. His administration signed a bill with a Republican provision to deny stimulus checks to millions of American citizens married to immigrants, and now he's vowed to suspend green card applications. We turn to Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thank you so much, Sonali. It's my honor.
So I imagine that you are not at all surprised that President Trump has used the pandemic to once more go after immigrants. He has been doing that throughout his presidency, and it seems as though he would never let any good crisis go to waste when it comes to attacks on immigrants. I want to start with some of the latest announcements and then go back to what has been transpiring over the past several weeks of the pandemic. The latest is, of course, that he is putting a moratorium on legal immigration right now, a 60-day ban on green card applicants coming to the U.S. And he's making this claim, he's justifying it, saying that he wants Americans to be first in line for jobs rather than foreigners coming from abroad. And he's also used the term the invisible enemy when talking about the virus, which is also sort of a double meaning, I think, for immigrants. Are you at all surprised about this latest attack?
Absolutely not. It's, the Trump administration really represents a far-right government. It's very much a clear part of their ideology, their agenda, in terms of continuing to try to implement policies and promote a very hostile, anti-immigrant, racist ideas and policies. So it is consistent. I just think that at this current moment, it is the stakes are so high for everybody. And again, it's another reason why during this global health crisis that we need to be challenging those ideas, because it's not just about someone on the border or one segment of the population being affected. This pandemic is clearly connected, shows how connected we all are. And we need to make sure that we tear down any forms of discrimination or distinction to care and the support that needs to happen. And so pushing forward those kinds of ideas is actually deadly. So, in terms of access, bringing people in, people who are trained like in healthcare to do a number of these jobs are frontline workers. Immigrants are frontline workers in not just in healthcare, but in the cleaning, in agriculture, and they actually right now are doing heroic work. So instead of trying to stigmatize immigrants, we should be honoring them beyond words, but in our policies.
Right. There's some huge percentage of doctors and even nurses around the country of immigrant origin. And we currently have a shortage of skilled physicians. One of the exceptions that Trump carved out in the announcement that he made this week around the green card moratorium was that of seasonal guest workers or immigrants. Not that they generally have been brought in via green cards, because green cards would in fact be quite advantageous for them. Mostly there've been special programs, so-called guest worker programs, to bring in immigrant farm workers. And I believe even early on in the pandemic, Trump and his administration approved and fast-tracked the seasonal worker permissions, but he doesn't verbally acknowledge that there are migrant farm workers picking the produce that feeds the vast majority of Americans, right?
Absolutely. And that those workers are not receiving the support that they need if the overwhelming majority are ineligible for the economic aid and support if they or someone in their family gets sick, and as well as the protections. I mean, we're really behind on the eight ball. As we know, healthcare workers get a lot of attention, but throughout all of these industries, this essential work, immigrants are very much a part of this work, this essential work that's happening, and they don't have the protections that they need. And at a time when the Trump administration is talking about, let's get everyone back to work, what we're seeing here is that at this moment, we're having more incidents rise of essential workers getting sick and their family members because those accommodations, those protections have not been in place. And many of them are overcoming their fear, speaking out. BOCES has been actively supporting these workers. It's now a major part of what we are prioritizing is to encourage people to speak, come forward, to lose their fear, and to be supported in terms of really a coordinated effort to shore up the protections that they need. And that's a gamut. It's not just health and safety. It's policies such as paid sick leave, non-retaliation policies, period, that are clear and spelled out to be able to contain this crisis. So I think on the contrary, in terms of this very, like you said, selective approach, it's completely ignoring low-wage workers and undocumented immigrant workers and their families right now who are on the front lines.
So these are workers that are disproportionately represented in those low-wage industries that are also being considered essential workers. So the farm workers are one aspect, but also, of course, grocery workers, people in the restaurant industry, and as you said, janitorial workers, nurses and others, many, many people of immigrant background, some even undocumented. And they are being left out of the economic help that Congress has signed on to, right, and passed. There have been exceptions carved out. Obviously, you know, we already knew that undocumented immigrants were not going to be getting any of those stimulus checks. Now we're hearing that even U.S. citizens who are married to immigrants are not going to get their economic stimulus checks. This is shocking.
It's another astounding example of the level of cruelty that is being driven by this kind of racism. That the fact that you have a family, that they were so thoughtful in creating these parameters, where it's not just an undocumented worker who is paying their taxes, by the way, because they're required to. So yes, they report their taxes as they are required to with an individual tax identification number, and do contribute to the public welfare through Social Security, unemployment, public health, though of which they are there are many barriers for them if they live in a state, as most do, that doesn't provide for that, but federally they don't. So these workers who are contributing, it's not just that they're excluded, but that if they're in a household with their someone who also, even though they have a Social Security number, their children are U.S. citizens, which is often the case, then their whole household is denied the cash support to get them through this difficult time when people are being asked to quarantine. So who's disproportionately affected? You're largely affecting children. Hmm. So it's cruel.
So I understand that even immigrants with legal documents who use an individual taxpayer identification number to file taxes, so they're paying into the money that's coming, you know, that these stimulus checks are going to be paid from, those people will also be excluded. I mean, it seems as though over and over again, this country, especially under Trump, but not exclusively, tells us that it's fine for immigrants to be taken advantage of to benefit the U.S. economy, but to reap very few benefits in return.
Absolutely. I mean, they are contributing to unemployment, yet don't access it, can't access it. But at this time right now, when so many people have been laid off, I mean, and it's very common what we're seeing.
And the 22 million Americans that have lost their jobs are probably not counting undocumented immigrants who have been laid off, right?
I mean,
if they're being paid off the books, for example.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they definitely wouldn't be counted in that figure.
Right.
But so many people are actually officially, and obviously some of those people might would be probably like in the restaurant industry and things like that. But so many people are also officially on and contributing. That's why we know like the level of contribution that they're making. But it's just that it's deadly now. It's not just that you're not available to access unemployment, but that it's in a period of a pandemic, workers are being forced to make a choice right now. And, you know, if worker, like, I'll give you an example. Right now, we've been working with, again, with a number of essential workers who we've been encouraging to come forward, and they have been, and that number keeps going up now. You know, a very common situation is if you're a single mom, you don't have a low-wage job, you don't have your own doctor, you don't have access to private insurance, you don't receive anything from this federal cash support. You know, a lot of those workers are either suffering hard through this kind of crushing economic situation where if they were laid off, so many who work in restaurant industry, or are also... if they're sick, feeling that they have to go to work instead of comply with this policy of staying home because they're worried, of course, about how they're going to take care of their children. So it's not just the economic piece is very, very critical. And in many different places, you have seen the state step forward to really provide options to fill that gap. Here in Wisconsin, that is not the case. And so we're seeing more at a community level, some funds being created in Dane County, in Milwaukee and Waukesha County, VOSAs for a statewide. So these like kind of support that can help around getting diapers, paying for medicine. So some of the most basic things in our period, like our extension of Safe at Home been extended through May. So this is a very difficult time, and there has to be a real movement to call on local, state, and federal government to step in to meet these gaps. And again, it's not just what's morally right, which it is morally right, but it's also that if we're going to prevail over this deadly situation, then that requires everyone having access to healthcare, worker rights protections, and the ability to stay home if they're sick, if they have to take care of someone who's sick, or if they have to quarantine because someone on their job was sick. But we are seeing this new explosion of cases arising.
And I just want to mention in terms of state help, the state of California, where I am based, has put together under Governor Gavin Newsom's leadership, a fund that would offer modest payments to undocumented immigrants. About 150,000 adults will receive about $500 in cash payments using a mix of taxpayer funds and also charitable contributions. You were mentioning how it's an issue of public health. If immigrant labor is not given the same rights as citizens in terms of paid sick leave, not that all American citizens have paid sick leave either, but if they're not getting this right to take paid sick leave, isn't it endangering the public health? I understand that your organization was working with some Wisconsin-based meatpacking companies where you took some action. Tell me a little bit about that work.
Yeah, this is just recently we were contacted by some workers at two companies, one JBS, Packerland, and another American Foods. in Green Bay, and most recently at Strauss. And in addition to now some other workers just today from Echo Lands, which is produces eggs, and other industries. It really was very brave of these workers to step forward, in particular in Green Bay. One is a worker who tested positive, and Raquel Alvarado, and Dora Flores, who's has also become tested positive. She's the family member of where her father at JBS Packerland, been employed there for 14 years, had also tested positive. So right now, through 77 workers at JBS have been tested positive, and that's the problem. That what we've found is that since this started, some accommodations were made in some parts of the workforce, but especially in these large production companies, the accommodations that were necessary, so the 6 feet distancing on a production line, the masks as well, were not being provided. And that's where you have, if one person is exposed in these close areas, of course, that means that you're gonna see this increase. And so in what we did as a response to that, I think the most important thing we did is elevate their voice to give it the attention, the urgency that it deserved, and made sure that we contacted the governor's office, the state of Wisconsin Health Department, obviously the employers themselves, and as well as some of the local officials. And it has been very productive. I think the fact that this became more public, and that since then we've actually seen the growth of more cases, which just emphasizes the point that this is not something to be treated lightly. We've been seeing that masks are now available. They're being brought in, and we continue to work, encourage those workers to form groups where we can communicate with them, and thus communicate with the health department, with OSHA, with these other entities about the making sure that these guidelines are being implemented right away, not tomorrow, not a month from now, but immediately. And so there has been that shift, and that's something that has been, it's been very encouraging to see how they've stepped forward, both the government and in terms of the governor's office communicating with them. And they have said that they will, that workers will receive paid sick days or things like that, sick leave. Mm-hmm. But it's something that has to be monitored. And it's something that, it's not something that's gonna happen overnight. And I do think as more cases come forward, and I think this is a national show, so encouraging folks to support for essential workers to come forward, to speak up, to get the support, whether that's a union, whether that's a community organization. And that one of the things, for example, that we're asking is that if one worker under these conditions, when it's in a place where there isn't physical distancing taking place, we don't need to know the name of that worker, but that should immediately be posted on the health department website. The employer should be informed so that those workers can be informed. They don't have to know who, but that someone tested positive in that department so they can self-quarantine and be tested.
Now, I also want to ask you, Christine, about the fact that we are continuing to detain and imprison immigrant families around the country, although the issue of immigrant detention has fallen or out of the news. There are still thousands of immigrants being held, often in privately run detention facilities throughout the country. And like advocates have been making the case for prison inmates, others have also been making the case for immigrant detainees. There have been numerous news reports of coronavirus cases in those facilities. The ACLU this week has launched a lawsuit against the federal government to immediately take action over detention facilities near the border. How critically important is this? I mean, there's children that are still being held, and they're being held without access to safe equipment, without access to proper healthcare, and in conditions that aren't exactly conducive to social distancing.
This is a urgent demand, both for the incarcerated and for detainees, because, and for the people who work there.
Because, as
has been described, I mean, there's been a description even by officials themselves as the healthcare pandemic, public healthcare crisis under this pandemic as a tinderbox. Because I mean, it's a place where already we know there's been a lot of lack of deaths, illness, but under these conditions where so many people are being held together, that there has been an increase and there will continue to be increases of illness and death. And so right now, immigration itself and Customs and Border Patrol, one thing that we have communicated to people is that they have reverted to a prior policy, which was that they would not be detaining people for, you know, unless under certain kind of criteria, much more kind of serious circumstances, to kind of give people. But we have been encouraging people to come forward if that if someone is being detained by immigration, adding to that situation. There also have been a number of protests that have been done and will continue to be done to call for the release of detainees so that they can go back to their families and to be removed from that situation. So that's something that is very critical and continues to be another source of advocacy.
Christine, give out a website for your organization, Voces de la Frontera.
VDLF.org, Voces de la Frontera. And the emergency fund is there too, as well as the information on the work that we're posting information on our essential workers, which can be used as for others in terms of looking at the kind of response that we've organized.
That's VDLF.org. Christine, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Blessings to you.
My guest has been Christine Newman Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera. We've been discussing Trump's most recent anti-immigrant attacks. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.